This is Jim Inkster coming today on Talk Louisiana. We will visit with the world-renowned cognitive scientist Steven Pinker. His book is Enlightenment Now. He believes, Dr. Pinker does, that we should be more optimistic about our lives in contemporary America and around the world. Also on the show today, we'll talk with Margie Jenkins. She's 96 years old, and tonight she becomes the first woman to be inducted in the Louisiana Agriculture Hall of Distinction. Also, we'll find out about the Louisiana International Film Festival coming to our city next month, and we'll hear from Ian Burney and also Elliot Estelle, fine actress, and Melinda DeLotte on what's going on with the Gridiron Show, and the Associated Press reporter will give her take on week two at the special, at the regular session at the Capitol. Now the news. This is Jim Inkster, and we're privileged and honored to visit with Steven Pinker, an experimental cognitive scientist and one of the world's foremost writers on language, mind, and human nature. He's a professor of psychology at Harvard University, also taught at Stanford and MIT, and his book is at the very top of the bestseller list and has been for several weeks, Enlightenment Now, The Case for Reason, Science, Humanism, and Progress. And good morning to you, Steven Pinker.
Good morning.
You believe that the world is a complex place. I think most of us would concur with that. But you also believe that perhaps we're not getting the full story. What are we missing right now?
We tend to miss the slow trends that make the world better bit by bit, that never make the papers because they don't happen all at once. Sometimes they do, but more often trends like the reduction in global poverty by about 75% just in the last three decades, the rise of democracy, the decline of war deaths, the increase in safety, the reduction in poverty at home. Because these occur bit by bit, and there's never a Thursday in October in which they just make a big bang or a big splash, we don't read about them, and we can therefore be unaware of the ways in which the world is improving. Now, every once in a while, there can be an event that does make the news. Even then, we often don't appreciate its significance. My favorite example is a year and a half ago when the government of Colombia announced a peace agreement with the FARC guerrillas. They brought to an end the last war in the Western Hemisphere. And we used to have lots of wars throughout Central America and in parts of South America. Now an entire hemisphere of the world is free of war. That's true, in fact, of 5/6 of the world's surface is free of war. But that's a fact that you can't easily gather from the news, because whenever a war does take place, it dominates the headlines.
Steven Pinker is a man who has studied the world, and his book is Enlightenment Now. Bill Gates calls it his new favorite book, and you note that life has become safer, not only in the United States, but in other parts of the world. We're living longer, yet it remains, the world does, a dangerous place. But Americans, you note, are 96% less likely to be killed in a car accident than they were at one time. And we could go on and on and on. But why do we have this perception that we're in peril continuously?
Part of it is because of the way the human mind works. We estimate risk and probability and danger by how easily we can call examples to mind. Cognitive psychologists call it the availability heuristic. And so if we can think of a disaster or a tragedy, a shark attack, a tornado, a terrorist attack, it leads us to the impression that people are getting eaten by sharks all over the place, or that terrorism is a major risk to life and limb. Whereas whenever you look at the numbers, you see that terrorism kills a tiny fraction of the number of people who die in accidents, and even in the kind of homicides that don't make the news, but that police deal with day in, day out. And the fact that we are attuned to what can go wrong much more than what can go right. For good evolutionary reasons, there are a lot of things that can kill you. There aren't a whole lot of things that can make you better off. And so when you have a modern society which has brought unprecedented improvements, we're not really wired to appreciate them. And then finally, there's a certain kind of almost a one-upmanship to pointing out how society is failing. People like to set themselves up as prophets, saying, you all are living complacent, naive lives, but I'm going to show you how things are much worse than you think they are.
But are we happier? You address this. Happiness is an elusive quality in many people's lives.
Yes, so we're not as happy as we should be, given how much better our lives have become. We don't have to worry about dying of smallpox or starving to death or being drafted in war and becoming cannon fodder. So we should be really happy. We live more than twice as long as our ancestors did. Our kids all go to school. But we do tend to adapt to our good fortune and find new things to get upset about. Even with that process, though, that process of kind of adapting to your circumstances and pocketing your good fortune, most countries are happier. That is, in studies that ask people how happy are you over the years, find that about 85% of countries have gotten happier. Interestingly, the United States isn't one of them. Our happiness has more or less stagnated. We're among the happier countries on Earth, but there are a lot of countries that are happier than we are, and over the years we haven't gotten any happier.
Well, our technology has evolved, and now many of us are immersed in social media. How has that changed our world?
Well, it's too soon to tell, and a lot of these developments have been going on way before the advent of social media. Nowadays, social media are blamed for everything that goes wrong, and I think that's something of a journalistic fad. Whatever happens, you say, oh, it must be social media, and I think that probably too much is being attributed to social media, because a lot of these trends have been going on for decades.
Do we need religion to be content in life?
I don't think so. The countries in Europe that have become pretty irreligious are perfectly happy, and people are flocking to them if they can get in as immigrants. But countries like Denmark and Norway and Switzerland and the Netherlands, which aren't particularly religious, are doing quite well. The people are perfectly happy.
You note that some of the big issues of the day are not followed very closely by the populace at large. For example, climate change. We have passionate opinions on both sides, and most of us conclude that there is climate change and there is global warming. But you say that people on both sides of this issue are often ignorant of the true nature of the discussion.
There's a great concern and puzzle among scientists as to why the scientific consensus is not accepted by such a large portion of the American population, and the usual explanation is that people are just not aware of the science, that people don't understand how the atmosphere works, what greenhouse gases are doing. But it turns out that in studies of either scientific literacy or climate literacy, there isn't a big difference between the deniers and the acceptors. What really determines people's belief is their politics. The farther to the right, the more likely you are to deny human-made climate change.
You note that when poverty is defined in terms of what people consume, Stephen, rather than what they earn, we find Americans' poverty rate has declined by about 90% since 1960. Now, David Brooks noted this in his column about your book in the New York Times, and it's a largely favorable view of your work. But Brooks seems to be of the mind that one part of the story that is not told in your book is how we are perhaps declining in other ways. Are we as good a people as we were in 1960?
It depends on what you mean by good, but we certainly don't have segregated motels and drinking fountains and poll taxes for African Americans. We don't throw gay people into jail for their private sexual activity. We don't keep women out of the workplace or prevent them from starting businesses or getting credit cards. We don't allow, don't turn our back when bosses hit on their female employees. We spank our kids less. We beat them in school less. We are less likely to have wars that kill tens of thousands of Americans and millions of people in other countries. So in a lot of ways, we are better. There's a higher rate of divorce, but on the other hand, that also means that there's a greater amount of freedom, that people aren't pressured into staying in marriages that they don't want to stay in. And when you have greater freedom, you may have, one of the risks is that people might make decisions that don't make them better off. And so unlike scourges that we've eliminated or reduced, that people that fall on people whether they like it or not, like disease and early death or murder or war, increased rates of divorce and decreased social trust are one of the risks that you incur when you give people more control over their lives.
You quote Chris Rock as saying that for the first time in world history, poor people are often fat. Quite often we are abusing the abundance of resources that we have.
That's right, and only a comedian can get away with putting it like that. But yeah, we have new problems as a result of solutions to yesterday's problems. And obesity is one of them. It's undoubtedly a problem. It is threatening people's lifespan. But as problems go, it's a much better problem to have than starvation. And we've solved the starvation problem so well that we now have an obesity problem, and we make inroads against that almost certainly. But we shouldn't fail to appreciate how far we've come, that has become a public health problem.
As noted, Bill Gates calls it my new favorite book of all time, Steven Pinker's Enlightenment Now, The Case for Reason, Science, Humanism, and Progress. It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Dr. Pinker.
Thank you.
This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Ali Baltazar is producing. It's nice to hear from Steven Pinker. He's one of the world's great minds. And coming later, we'll hear from actress Elliot Estelle and Ian Burney of the Louisiana International Film Festival. They'll comment on next month's event in Baton Rouge. It starts April 18th. Also, Associated Press Capitol reporter Melinda DeLotte will preview the 67th annual Gridiron Show and review week two of the regular session. The Gridiron Show Saturday night will feature Governor John Bel Edwards. There's also a Friday show, but the governor on his radio show yesterday said his special guest will be Coach O, Ed Orgeron of the LSU Fighting Tigers. Governor Edwards yesterday on his show also saluted 96-year-old Margie Jenkins from Amite, his hometown. And tonight at the Louisiana Agriculture Hall of Distinction, Margie Jenkins becomes the first woman to be inducted in the Hall of Distinction. And a note that is important is that our company, the Louisiana Radio Network, of which I'm the president, we present this event every year, so I'm honored to be the host for Margie Jenkins, and it is also a distinct pleasure to talk with this fine lady who at 96 1/2 continues to do her thing. Good morning, Margie Jenkins.
Good morning. How are you, Jim?
It's good to hear your voice. You graduated from Franklinton High School in 1938. 1938.
That's right. That's a long time ago.
That was just 3 years after Huey Pierce Long was assassinated. You're old enough to remember the Kingfish, I'm sure.
I do.
Well, the governor says he knows you well, Margie.
Yes. I've been knowing that family a long time.
Well, you began working right after high school. And in 1951, you and your husband, Bryant, who has since passed away, moved to Tangipahoa Parish and planted your first cash crop. What was it?
Watermelons. the old property we moved on to, Jim, there was only one little plot that was really, that you could go in there and plow up. The rest of it kind of had pine saplings going up in it. But anyway, grew our first watermelons. It was a good crop. They turned out real well. That was the first year that Congos came on the market. They were absolutely huge.
So there was a big market for watermelons in 1951.
Yes, there was. Yep.
In hot Louisiana, I can understand why. And if you'd like to talk with Margie, there is an opportunity in the next few minutes, 877-217-5757, or send us an email at talk@talklouisiana.org. Margie Jenkins is 96 and a half. Your birthday is September 5th.
Right.
And if you're about to be 97 this year, that would mean you were born, what, in 1921? And right. You moved to a meet and started a dairy farm there and got involved in the timber industry.
Right.
What prompted you to go to Tangipahoa Parish?
Well, my family lived in Washington Parish, not very far away from this old property, and I knew the old property, and I knew that I wanted land. And when this property came up for sale, we were still working in Covington, and we bought it in the fall of 1949. It was 90 acres, more or less, but it was on the parish line, close to my family where I grew up. So that was the reason. And I knew the property, and I knew that I didn't want to live too far away from my family. So that was a lot of it.
Well, you have a career that spans 80 years, and Margie, by virtue of being the first woman to be inducted in the into the Louisiana Agricultural Hall of Fame, Hall of Distinction, is getting plaudits all over the country. I've seen newspaper stories in San Francisco and Washington, D.C., all about this fine lady from Louisiana. And I know you're too modest to read any of them, but tonight you'll be appropriately recognized. And Holly in the Garden District asks, what is your secret to longevity and vitality? Why are you so... The governor said you're still doing it. You're still out in the fields on occasion. How do you do this?
I still go to the nursery every day. I can't do what I used to do, but I can still do a lot. I love to plant seeds. In the nursery, that is always the thing that I like best, to propagate and taking a tiny seed and see it grow into a plant. And I can still do that. And I can still make cuttings. There's a lot that I can do. So I'm still here every day. I love to visit with the customers. I can't pull the plants like I used to, but I can show people where they are and visit. So I'm still having a lot of fun. And as far as vitality, you have to have a passion in your life, I think, for something, and you have to pursue it. And I guess I was real fortunate that I probably inherited good genes to start with. But I live a happy life. I live a simple life, but it's a happy life. I love nature, mm-hmm. and I think that we get a lot of life from nature.
How hard was it losing your husband?
That was very hard. I had just lost my oldest son 15 months prior to that. He died of pancreatic cancer. And my husband was only 70, and of course he was a big part of everything that went on, and losing him was a terrible loss. And then shortly after that, I lost him in January, and then in that April, I lost my mom, who was almost 98. So it was really tough losing three people so close in my family mm-hmm. that way. But my doctor says all the time, well, you know you're a tough old bird, don't you? And I said, well, I guess so. So anyway, I survived it.
There's no doubt you are a survivor, Margie Jenkins. What an amazing person she is. A career spanning 8 decades, and she has been recognized by the LSU Ag Center and the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, who are also involved in the Hall of Distinction, as a person who is... one of the most knowledgeable experts on the planet in the cultivation of rare, unusual, and native landscaping plants. So you have done it all, haven't you?
No, not really. I got a lot yet to do.
I like that attitude. What would you like to do that you have not accomplished?
Well, I would like to do what I didn't hear you.
Would you like to do that you have not accomplished in your long career?
Well, I've selected some plants that I think's unusual, and I have a few more that I want to select. And there's so many good plants out there that get overlooked in the wild because there's so many variations because they are seedlings. And I just want to keep looking for the unusual of the natives that grow in our locale, because when we plant something that comes from this area, it grows off so much better than something that you may get shipped in, say, from further north or way north.
Another listener, Tracy, asked if you have outlived your siblings.
Have I done what?
Have you outlived your brothers and sisters?
Well, I was the oldest of six. And I have one living sister. She's 2 years younger than I. She will be 95 this year. And her birthday's in August, but she is in a nursing home. I lost my youngest sister in 96, and I was 13 years older than her. I was extremely close to her because she was almost like she was my, I was kind of like her second mama, to tell you the truth.
All right, hold tight. We're going to spend a few more minutes with this remarkable lady. We've got a few people who would like to speak with her, and if you'd like to join the conversation, 877-217-5757. Now the news with Adam Voss on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us. Allie Baltazar is producing today. In a few more minutes with Margie Jenkins at 96.5. She becomes the first woman to be inducted in the Louisiana Agriculture Hall of Distinction tonight at La Berge. And on deck is Ian Burney to talk about the Louisiana International Film Festival coming this way next month. Charlotte in Iberia Parish. Charlotte, good morning. You're on the air with Margie Jenkins. Hi, Charlotte.
Hello. Good morning. I'd like to ask your guest, what are the products she produces from her operation, and what has she been using tractors now? I'm assuming that she has, and whether she started with oxen or cows as the mechanism to plow her fields in the past. Thank you.
All right. I suspect you're using tractors now, but you go back to the day when oxen were used, don't you, Margie?
Well, we had a tractor when we started ours, and as far back as I remember when I was growing up, my dad had a tractor. I know that. I think it was an old Fordson, I believe it was. And I don't remember ever him using any oxen in his farming, but my dad was a farmer.
Well,
he grew cotton as well as sugarcane. But I know that he did have a tractor.
Well, the gentleman you'll be inducted with tonight, the late Pete Leneau, he was involved in innovations like multi-row machinery and satellite technology, and he went back to the day when a lot of the field work was done by hand or with the help of mules. Now,
yes, we had mules too.
You had
mules. Oh yes, we had mules. We did.
Wow.
And of course, they plowed with the mules.
Yeah, yeah.
And the only thing that I remember him using the tractor for was whenever he crushed the sugarcane to make syrup. Syrup was one of the things that he marketed. I well remember that we got our first radio. He exchanged 60 gallons of cane syrup for a little radio. Of course, it was a little battery radio, but that was the only one in the community, and honey, we had lots of company.
Well, we all knew radio would be important in our lives, so 60 gallons of cane syrup for one
gallons,
radio.
That's right.
That sounds like a fair trade.
Well, it was. It was a great trade.
Well, lastly, Charlotte asked, what crops are you currently producing?
Well, right now, I am just totally involved in the nursery operation is all that I'm in. Now, I do have a daughter who has cattle on the property and a granddaughter, but I don't have any part of that. When we sold the dairy, that ended my part of the livestock part. We sold the dairy when my husband became very sick.
Well, we hope you have a great trip to Baton Rouge, and you'll have a lot of folks waiting to salute you appropriately for your long career. And as you can hear, this is a worthy inductee we're talking about in Margie Jenkins, and I don't know of anybody worthier. So see you this evening, and congratulations. Thank you, Margie.
Thank you, Jim. I will have a good time. Thank you.
See you soon. And we're joined now by Ian Burney, who'll be in Baton Rouge in a few weeks for the Louisiana International Film Festival. And it is always a major event. I think, how many years now, Ian, for the film festival?
This is the sixth year.
Sixth year.
From a little acorn. It started 6 years ago. Yeah, so pretty happy about that. And
well,
I think it's going to be a great, we've got a great lineup. There's a lot going on. We have more films than we've had in any previous year. We're up to almost 50 features. And it's going to be a rich banquet, put it that way.
And I'm told you've seen all of the films.
I would say that I haven't seen the shorts, but of the features, yes, I think I've seen all of them, maybe 90. Maybe I've missed one along the way that we haven't. Our opening night film, actually, has been seen by some of the people on the committee, but I haven't seen it, but it's very exciting. This is the film Blaze, which Ethan Hawke directed, about a country western singer named Blaze Foley. And there's another singer who stars as Blaze Foley, Benjamin Dickey. And he's won awards at Sundance for this performance, and we're very excited to have that as the opening night film. Some of it was shot in and around Baton Rouge, and Benjamin Dickey will be appearing at the opening night. So that's on
the
Thursday,
19th.
April 19th. Yeah, I think it's exactly 4 weeks today.
Well, not to confuse matters, there was a movie mm-hmm. called Blaze in 1989 with Paul Newman and Lolita Davidovich, who played Blaze Starr. And long before Donald Trump and Stormy Daniels, there was Earl Long and Blaze uh-huh. Starr, but this is a different Blaze. And
this is a different Blaze, Blaze Foley. Although there has been a film about Blaze Foley. I've never seen that. I don't know much about it. I think it's from about 10 or 12 years ago. It might have been a television movie. But at any rate, this has come out of Sundance with much acclaim, and it's going to open our festival. And it's just one of maybe, it's probably about 10 films that have heavily music films. We have a wonderful documentary on Sammy Davis Jr. called Sammy Davis Jr. I Gotta Be Me, that covers his entire career.
Oh, that's great.
And that's a major performer. There's a lovely documentary on a New Orleans funk band called Papa Got Funk that played the New Orleans Film Festival in the fall, and we really wanted to bring it to Baton Rouge, so we have that. We have a documentary on Grace Jones, which is wild, on the first Friday of the festival. And she's both the Grace Jones, you know, the diva and the 6-inch heels, but this also follows her when she goes back to her roots in Jamaica, which was, you know, very, very small town, poor family. And it's the first time she's appeared on film without makeup, as it were. And I guess she was quite nervous to do it. But so you kind of get the person behind all of that glamour.
Yeah, I remember Grace Jones, and she was a Bond girl.
Ah, that's true. Yes.
A View to a Kill, 1985.
Well, she's now 70 years old. And she's still out there strutting and performing. And it's a lot of fun. And it's
so she's great, about the same age as our presidents. They're both in their early 70s. I wonder who's in better shape.
Don't give them any ideas.
I wonder who's in better shape.
I don't think she does the burgers at 6:30 at night.
No, Grace is quite a physical presence. And
yeah. And, you know, as usual, every year we do a section on called Southern Perspectives. We have 10 films in that section, all of which have some of a specific interest to people from the South, either because they were made by people who are living and working as filmmakers in the South, or about subjects of interest to them. I'm particularly excited about a film called this, and this is only of interest to the South in the sense that football is so important there, called Through the Banks of the Red Cedar. And it's made by the daughter of a famous African-American football player named Gene Washington, and it's the first film that covers this initiative. In 1963, Michigan State head coach
Duffy Doherty.
Doherty, exactly. He brought 23 African-American football players into the Michigan State, you know, football world, and that changed the game forever in terms of integration.
All right, I want to see that. What's the name of that film?
It's called Through the Banks of the Red Cedar, which I guess is the name of the song, the school song that she's using. But it's also very personal because this is a daughter who's kind of rediscovering her father. Jean is still alive. But I guess, you know, she was kind of somewhat estranged from, I guess, as a child, or at least he was maybe just too busy being a professional. And so she's kind of rediscovered the game and her father. And so it's got a personal story embedded in there as well.
We have over 50 presentations, and sometimes it's hard to pick and choose. And this will be the 19th through the 22nd.
Correct, yeah. Thursday night's the opening, but it really kicks in on Friday night about 5 o'clock. And then we run that night all day Saturday, starting shorts in the morning, and then around noon all the features kick in right through till 10 p.m. Sunday, roughly the same thing, and then there's a closing night on Sunday.
At Perkins Row.
We're on five screens at the Perkins Row.
Five screens, Perkins Row, the 19th through the 22nd, and there will be kind of an opening before the opening on the 18th at LSU. What's happening there?
Exactly. That's, again, a new film called Fail State. It examines the student debt crisis. So this is a film that the filmmaker sent it to us, and as soon as we saw it, we thought this is important because of LSU, but it also there are interviews with the president of LSU, so it seemed to make sense that rather than embed it within our festival in that short period of time, that we give it its own night at LSU. I'm not, you know, familiar enough with the facilities there, but it's screening on the campus at 7:30 on the Wednesday night, the 18th of April.
Very good. Elliot Estelle was going to be with us but could not be here. What film is she in? Do you know?
God, I don't know.
No.
I just know her as someone who's working for the film festival, but she is indeed an actress.
Yeah, I know
and,
she
you know,
is.
A few people, I know a few people associated with the festival are in Blaze in small roles. So there was a real hometown feeling about that film, but I honestly don't know what
Okay. Well, you've seen them, all the major features. What's your favorite?
Oh, gee. You know what? I've got to say, I think there's this film by Brett Haley called Hearts Beat Loud, and we're screening that in our gala slot on Saturday night, and that is just a touching, heartwarming, wonderful film about a father and daughter who write a hit song together. They're both musicians.
Well, thank you for joining us, Ian Burney, and good luck next month, and I'm sure
Always
we'll be
pleasure,
talking
Jim.
Again.
I hope so. Okay, take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
We'll be back with Melinda DeLotte after this pause on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us. Sally Baltazar producing, and our guest for the final segment is Melinda DeLotte. Melinda DeLotte is a Capitol reporter for the Associated Press, and come Saturday and Friday, she'll be on stage for the annual Gridiron Show. She's been involved for many years. This is the 67th annual production, and Melinda DeLotte, how many years have you been a part of it?
I think I'm right around 15 or 16 years now. I kind of lost track. It's been a long time.
15 or 16 years. So we're going back to the foster years, I guess, or close to
Absolutely.
It.
I started covering state government in Louisiana in 2000, and I think I started the Gridiron Show around 2002. But there are people who have been doing it a lot longer than I have. I mean, we're talking people who've been in it for 25, 35 years.
So. Yeah. Now, every governor, it's part of the job, it seems, goes to this show. And Bobby Jindal, I must say, was a good sport because he got hammered rather hard for several years, and he kept coming back for more. Buddy Romer was the only governor to boycott it in my time. He went once, and that was all it took. He never came back. Said that I don't like John Hill playing me, and I don't like what they're saying about me and my wife, so I'm not coming back. And he's never been back, either as a spectator or as a governor. But this governor, John Bel Edwards, yesterday on the radio on his monthly show, he said he really gets into this. He likes it.
Yeah, he seems to be a very good sport about it. Like you said, Governor Jindal is a very good sport about it. I mean, in my tenure, Governors Foster, Blanco, Jindal, and Governor Edwards have all shown up and very dutifully played along and laughed when we mocked them. And, you know, the funny thing we always talk about is it's much easier for the first couple years when you do it because you're new in your administration. And it gets harder to sit through, I'm sure, as time goes along because we start to have a lot more material every year.
Now, the show that's done in Baton Rouge is the longest gridiron show in America, I'm told, next to the one in Washington.
I think the details were the longest continually running show. A lot of them have taken off time for various reasons over the years, and we're one of the only ones that has gone straight through and not really taken any time off.
Now, is there anybody who's been in every one of them?
We had a gentleman who had been in every one of the shows, and he passed away last year. So he had been through all 66 of the ones we had, and we finally lost him, and that was very sad.
Well, this will be quite a production, but in Baton Rouge, many of the performers actually work in state government. How is it in some cases with them making fun of their bosses?
Well, what we've tried to do is we make sure that everyone who so the folks in the show are reporters or former reporters. So in a lot of instances, it's reporters who have then gone on to other jobs, a lot of which are in state government or in public relations in some capacity. We make sure that those people who work in state government have cleared it with the people that they work for and that there's no issue there. And generally speaking, we don't put them in skits where they'd be mocking somebody that they work for or somebody that they work, you know, with.
Oh, why not? Why not?
You know, we don't want people to lose their sources of employment just because they're, you know, in a fun show that raises money for good causes.
It's at the American Legion Hall, right?
Yes, it is Friday and Saturday night at the American Legion Hall, right near the State Police complex over there by Florida and Independence. And the doors open at 6:30. The show starts at 7:45. Tickets are $25 each. If you are interested in tickets, you can email gridironshowbr@yahoo.com, and somebody will get back to you with all the information. We have a lot of statewide elected officials who go. We have a lot of folks who work in the Capitol and around the Capitol who go. And then we have a lot of people who just go because they like to see us skewer some politicians.
Mm-hmm. So it's tomorrow night and Saturday night. Now, in the past, I know some of the proceeds have gone to public radio. So I don't know
that
if that's...
That is true.
Well, so...
The main focus is we raise money for journalism student scholarships. So we'll have a Southeastern student this year who will be collecting a $1,000 scholarship on Saturday night. And then the other proceeds, after we pay off the cost of the show, we've made donations to public radio and public television. That tends to be where the money goes.
All right. A listener, who is it, Allie? Maria. She asks if any of these former shows are kept for posterity, or are they available for public consumption?
Thankfully, no.
No,
we've had people film them over the years, and we have, you know, DVDs that are kind of floating around among cast members and former cast members, but we've never released them in any way. I know there's been discussion about, you know, having some sort of gridiron archive released, either given to the archive or, you know, put in a library or something. So we have a lot of the the performances on DVD. We've just never released them publicly before. I mean, what happens with this show is the folks that are involved, you know, they're pretty good sports about it, the people who are the politicians who are getting skewered. So we have tried to keep all of this largely off the record if possible.
I'd like to see it out there for everybody to see. That would be fun. That would be fun. I got a new appreciation for Governor Jindal. He was such a private person that people really didn't get a glimpse of him except when he was running for office. But he was always a very good sport, and sometimes it was brutal, like the Mardi Gras night rebuttal to President Obama.
Right.
I
don't know. I will say I always respect the governors for coming, because I don't know personally if I could sit there and have someone skewer me like that and put a good face on it. I hope I could. I hope I have that strength of spirit, but we were pretty hard on Governor Jindal, specifically in the second term towards the end, and he dutifully sat there. He put a smile on his face. He was very gracious about it. His wife was very gracious about it, and we were always very appreciative. I think they knew that it was in the spirit of fun, and that, you know, and that the money goes to a good cause. But he was very gracious about the whole thing.
And unlike Buddy Romer, he kept coming back for more.
He did. I was not around for when Governor Romer decided he did not like Gridiron, but that is definitely one of those stories that lives on in Gridiron lore.
As it should. What's going on at the session?
Well, the Senate is debating bills as we speak. They're trying to move through an accelerated session calendar. There's an attempt to try and wrap up the regular session a little bit early so that they could have another special session on tax proposals in the same time period that they would normally be in the regular session. In other words, so that taxpayers wouldn't pay any additional money for them to come into another special session, that they would pay the same amount they would pay if they were having a regular session. So things are moving a little faster. Committee hearings are more jam-packed than they would normally be this time of a session. And there's a lot more activity on the House and Senate floor than there might otherwise be at this point. But we'll see if they actually are able to manage the calendar well enough to end early.
And the governor, for the third year in a row, is coming back, asking lawmakers to embrace an increase in minimum wage and equal pay for women. He knows, based on the last 2 years, it's not going to be easy. But where is that in the process right now?
All of those bills are awaiting debate on the Senate floor, and the Senate actually set them for a special debate calendar on Tuesday. So they'll all come up on Tuesday.
What do you think will happen?
Well, I mean, like you said, these ideas have been proposed before for the last 2 years, and that they haven't made it through the process. It does seem as though they are still long shots for making it to the governor's desk. The business lobbying organizations have pretty strong opposition to most of these proposals, and that carries a lot of sway in the building. There's a lot of concern about what raising the minimum wage could mean for businesses, and they have some objections to the equal pay provisions as well. So we'll see, but it does seem as though this year may turn out to be just like the last two.
And for those who doubted, if they ever did, the governor's social stance as a conservative, yesterday on his show, he said he would be inclined to sign a bill that would stop abortions at 15 weeks of pregnancy. That didn't really come as a surprise to those who know him, but that is one issue he's very passionate about.
That's true, and that's the first time he's actually said definitively where he was on that bill. But he also did say that, you know, he added the caveat of if it reaches his desk, and he's not really sure what the prospects are for the bill moving through the session. So the bill by Senator Milkovich, who is also a Democrat, hasn't yet been scheduled for a hearing that I know of. I haven't seen it show up on a debate calendar. So it's sort of unclear when it will actually be heard and if it's going to run into any problems along the way and never reach the governor. But yes, he did say he would. He was inclined to sign it if it reached him. So we'll see.
Thank you, Melinda DeLotte. Good luck tomorrow and Saturday at the American Legion Hall, the 67th Annual Gridiron Show. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks so much.
We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Until then, stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.